Sorry, Lil Shishi, owner Tesla and Schwab, Thursday, 16th of January, of the Alan Kimchi Parshas Yisro.
Good evening, Rabbi Chai. It's a pleasure to be here, especially in this venue, Hashem Eden, David, and it's very nice to have the opportunity to learn a bit of Torah together. Parshas Yisro gives one an enormous range of different topics, which I'd like to just choose three or four different small Megudas, which one can really, I think, focus on and learn something from. I'd like to start, really, with a very small idea, a gem, an idea which I saw brought down in the written by the Gedolei Hasidus. There was a sefer written in the 19th century, Degel Machane Ephraim. Degel Machane Ephraim was one of the Gedolei Hasidus, who was a grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, and in his writings he brings down some very beautiful ideas of the Baal Shem Tov. That's what I want to share with you just to start off this evening. I think it's a very typical idea of the Gedolei Hasidus, and I find it a bit of a spiritually a beautiful musig. And he goes something like this. So we all know Parshas Yisro is Matan Torah. Matan Torah, Klal Yisrael heard one time only. Klal Yisrael heard directly the Dvar Hashem. The rest of the Torah they heard through Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Aseret HaDibros, or at least the first two of the Aseret HaDibros, are going to Chazal and Melchi Le'ilecho. They heard the Koyuch Hashem unmediated, without going through any medium. They heard it directly. So much so that the Gemara, in fact, says in Makkos, one of the rare occasions that the Gemara itself cites a gematria, it says on the Pasuk in the Dvarim, Torah Tzivolonu Moshe. What does it mean, Torah Tzivolonu Moshe? The word Torah is a gematria 611. Says the Gemara, then the Makkos, Torah Tzivolonu Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu taught us 611 mitzvahs. What about the other two? Says the Gemara, the other two, we didn't need Moshe. We heard them directly. We heard directly Mipi Hagvura. So if you heard the Mipi Hagvura, it's a territory of a lot of Moshe. So I've called upon him, the Kiyu Hashem of Har Sinai was the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the voice of the Ein Sof. And we understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the Kiyu Hashem. This is, in fact, the Pasuk says in Voschana, after the Luchas Shnius, it says, you heard, Moshe Rabbeinu says to God, you heard the Dvar Hashem, Kiyu Godoyel, the Loi Yosaf. What does it mean, Loi Yosaf? So one of the Perushim, Loi Yosaf, means it never ended. Ein Lo Seif. Loi Yosaf means it was infinite. Right? And it makes sense. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Ein Seif. If there's a Kel Hashem directly, the Kel Hashem is Ein Seif. Says the Baal Shem Tov, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says that this is important idea for understanding a Mishnah in the last chapter of Pirkei Avos, when the Mishnah there says, every day there is a baskol ha'chayrev from Har Sinai. What is that baskol? Says the Baal Shem Tov, that baskol is the Dvar Hashem of Matan Torah. The Dvar Hashem of Matan Torah is being said Ein Sof, below Yosaf, is constantly being said. Right? The problem is, so what does it mean? Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us the Kel Hashem constantly if you can't hear it? Right? So he says, this is the beauty of Hasidus, one of the beautiful ideas of Hasidus, is that actually even though we think we can't hear it, our physical ears can't hear it, but every time a Jew has Hirurei Tshuva, has a feeling of his Hirurus, has a feeling that he wants to be a Ben Aliyah, he wants to be his Rebbeinu a little bit, what is that feeling? Where does it come from? So the Baal Shem Tov, one's neshama can hear the Kel Hashem Me'achir. That's a beautiful idea. The Kel Hashem Me'achir of calling mankind to behave the Hashem, that is a Kel that the neshama sometimes hears it. It's a bit like a Ledugma, a radio station is constantly transmitting, but only when you tune into it do you actually pick it up. So he says, usually we don't hear that Kel Hashem. The Kel Hashem Me'achir, we usually can't hear it. Every now and again there's a moment where a person's neshama tunes in exactly at the right moment and just hears that message. When you hear that message, that's a moment of Yisroimimus, that's a moment of Kedusha, and that's why there's a Kel Hashem constantly at HaChayrev. So when you hear that Aseret HaDibros in Yisrael, it wasn't a historical event, it was something that's happening all the time, the Baskov Machas. That's the first thing I wanted to share with you, a very beautiful gem of an idea the name of Baal Shem Tov. The next thing I want to have a look at is a very beautiful Ibn Ezra, a question and an answer in Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra was the beginning, was the first of the Mepharshim, the earliest of the Mepharshim, writing about 900 years ago. And he sometimes comes out with very interesting questions and answers, which are very difficult to pick up. And I'll show you the Taka, one or two of the Achronim pick up this idea in a different style later on. So he asks the following question. Yisro, we all know, Parshas Yisro has got two halves to it. The second half is Sinai, Matan Torah. But the first half is the story of Yisro the person. Right? Even the story of Yisro has got divided into two halves. The first half is when he comes, and he according to Chazal, he's Misgayer. And then the second half of Yisro's story is when he gives advice. He gives advice to Moshe Rabbeinu. What is his advice? That Moshe Rabbeinu shouldn't be the great leader down here, the whole of Amcho, the whole of Klal Yisrael. He should have some sort of middle management, right? The principle of middle management, that he should appoint, sorry, Alofim, sorry, Meir, sorry, Chamishim, sorry, Asara. He should appoint a whole team. If you look at the numbers, actually, we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu had to train about 75,000 people, right, according to Yisro's plan. He had to train about 75,000 people who would then be transmitters of Torah to Amcho, to Klal Yisrael. So in that way, this was Yisro's piece of advice. Yisro wasn't teaching Moshe Rabbeinu Torah. The contrary, Yisro was a Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu in Torah, but Yisro taught Moshe Rabbeinu an Eitzah. He gave him an Eitzah. We would call it today, Yisro was a management consultant. Right? We've all had experiences of management consultants. They come in and tell you how you can run your business better. So Yisro came in the chutz, and he gave Moshe Rabbeinu the Eitzah, and Moshe Rabbeinu took it. Attack in Devarim chapter 1, Moshe Rabbeinu says, this was what we did. We appointed, sorry, Alofim, sorry, Meir, sorry, Chamishim, sorry, Asara. One of the interesting questions is, when did Yisro arrive in Klal Yisrael? Was it before Matan Torah, or was it after Matan? So this actually is a machlekes in Zedochim, Daf Kuf Tes Zayin, where Yesh Omri and Yisro came before Matan Torah, Yesh Omri and Yisro came to machlekes Amorah in the Gemara. In the Mepharshim also, there are different Mepharshim who take different views on this. Ibn Ezra is convinced that he came after Matan Torah. And he's a whole list of liars, I won't go into them now, but it must be that Yisro came after Matan Torah, primarily because what he's talking about? He's talking about Moshe Rabbeinu's big job of teaching Torah to Klal Yisrael. Before Matan Torah, there wasn't yet a Torah to teach. And God brought him back to Ibn Ezra, and even Rashi on this week's parsha, right? Rashi on the posse, I thought Techazem, because of Rashi there says that Yisro came after Matan Torah. I say, so the story of Yisro is written before Matan Torah. Right. So we're all familiar with the principle of a muktam umrucha batera. Doesn't mean the Torah is haphazard, but it means that occasionally certain stories are out of chronological sequence. They're not exactly in the right order. But when a story is taken out of its sequence, we have to ask the question, what? Why would the Torah take a story that happened after Matan Torah? Rashi says, Vahimi Mocharos means Mocharos Yom Kippurim, after the second Luchas, right? And yet, it's told to us in the story before Bachodesh HaShlishi, before Matan Torah itself. Why would that be? Why would the Torah write the story of Yisro before? This is the question that the Ibn Ezra deals with, the Ramban deals with it. Later on, and then the Sefer Solomon has got a whole chapter on it, the Safena speaks about it. It's an interesting question. Why would that be? The answer of the Ibn Ezra, I think, is very interesting, very relevant even for us today. He says Yisro's story had to be there for the following reason. What is the last story of Parshas Bishalach? Bishalach speaks about Amalek, right? Klal Yisrael have just been created, immediately after Kriyas Yamsuf. They meet one of the nations, one of the Ummos HaOlam, Amalek, and Amalek demonstrate the most unbelievable hatreds, and they're driven in the language of Homon, Horosha, and the Hashmid. They've only got one goal in mind, is to destroy Klal Yisrael. That's Amalek. And Amalek is, as the last word of Mishalach is, Milchamah Hashem Amalek, Midor Dor. So Amalek wasn't a one-off. But Amalek is hardwired into Jewish history, that you have Amalek, Midor Dor. And there's always Amalek, and their goal is only one goal, Lahashmid La'arugul Abed. That is the Yisod of anti-Semitism in all its different forms, is Amalek. Says the Ibn Ezra something very interesting. Israel were just created, and the first nation they're meeting is Amalek, they might have come to think, or the reader of the Chumash might come to think, that all the Umos HaOlam hate us, that all the Umos HaOlam are Amalek. Therefore, the Torah wanted to give us the story of Yisrael as an antidote to the story of Amalek. That in the world of Umos HaOlam, there are Amaleks, but there are also Yisraels. Who is Yisrael? Yisrael is not only doesn't hate us, but he's an admirer of Klal Yisrael, so much so that he's eventually misgayer. And not only that, but he's a Baal Eitz, a Baal Chochma, to such a degree that Moshe Rabbeinu is willing to listen to his Eitzus. Right? So we have, to Ibn Ezra, wants us to understand, he doesn't actually say it like this, but I think what he implies is that if one learns too much about the story about Amalek, one could come to be a paranoid, to walk around life thinking everybody hates us. All the goyim hate us. Right? And I know people who do think that, and I think we all have met people who walk around convinced that every guy hates us. Why do they hate us? Amalek! Right? So Ibn Ezra, of course there is Amalek. But that's only half the story. In the Umos HaOlam, there's also Yisrael. And Yisrael is a different type of non-Jew. He's somebody who is an admirer and a makabel. What is the first word of the parsha? Yishma, Yisrael, he wants to hear it. He wants to hear the emes. And when he hears the emes, he's makir the emes. Right? And therefore, in the Umos HaOlam, there are both. And this is a very important message. This, says Ibn Ezra, is why the Torah takes Yisrael's story and places it at the beginning of the parsha as an antidote to the story of Amalek. And I think this is a very beautiful and insightful page. What I saw in the Tzvas Emes is, you sometimes find the Achronim pick up ideas from the Rishonim, but express them in a different vocabulary. So the Tzvas Emes is using the vocabulary more Kabbalah and Hasidus. So he says, if he uses a different language, he says that actually that Yisrael is the tikkun for Amalek. What does the tikkun mean in this sense? And he explained a little bit. It means that Klal Yisrael were given the Torah, but they were given also what we would call today a mission statement in Parshat Yisrael. They were told, Ba'atem tiyu li, mamleches kehanim, v'goy kodesh. That they have to be mamleches kehanim. What's the implication of mamleches kehanim? That they're going to be taught the Torah, but they, vis-a-vis the Umos HaOlam, they're going to have to be kehanim. Meaning what? They're going to have to transmit Torah, the values of Torah, and transmit bracha, right? Avraham Avinu, the beginning of Lech Lecha. He's told, what's your goal in life? B'nivrechu v'cho, kol mishpachos adamah v'zarecha. And that through Klal Yisrael, we should be the conduit of brachas to the Umos HaOlam. Throughout history, this has been a very difficult thing to fulfill. But Bachris HaYamin, the time of Mashiach, this is Kimala Ha'oret Deos Hashem, that Klal Yisrael will succeed in transmitting at least the values of Torah to the Umos HaOlam. Says the Tzvas Emes, if the Umos HaOlam are Amalek, this plan isn't going to work. Because Amalek hates us, and they're not listening to us. They won't listen. And therefore, Klal Yisrael couldn't be the Mamleches Kohen in the Gei Kodesh. Because in order to be Mamleches Kohen in the Gei Kodesh, they have to have people who are Mekablim. They have to have Umos HaOlam who are willing, if they're so motivated only by hatred and rejection of Klal Yisrael. Therefore, the Torah comes to tell us that it's true there are Amaleks, but there are also Yisraels. And by Yishma Yisrael becomes, for the Tzvas Emes, more than just an individual guy who comes to be misguided. Yisrael becomes a model of the Umos HaOlam who are willing to listen to the message that Klal Yisrael have to transmit to the world. And in that sense, that's the tikkun. The tikkun of Amalek will never listen. And Achris HaYamin, right? After the Shmur who promises us that Amalek will be Timcha Ezech Amalek. Amalek will be destroyed. Why will he be destroyed? Because he can't listen. He can't hear the MS of the Torah. Achris HaYamin. He'll have to be. And therefore, Yisra is the tikkun to the problem of Amalek, and that is a very beautiful, if you like, variation on the Tzvas Emes, on the idea originally launched by the Ibn Ezra many hundreds of years earlier. wanted to pick out one or two other very interesting little ideas here in the parasha. One of them is a whole theme that you find in Midrashim and Chazal connecting Matan Torah to Briyas Olam. The connection between Matan Torah and Briyas Olam is a very profound connection. One of the examples of that, one of my famous examples, is Rashi on the Pasuk Vayeru Vayevoker Yom Hashishi. What does Rashi say there? Why does it say Vayeru Vayevoker Yom Shishi? Why Yom Hashishi? Right? Everyone speaks about the hay of Hashishi. Right? Yom Hashishi is the last word in Bereishis chapter 1. So what does Rashi say? Rashi says the whole world, the whole Bria, right? The whole cosmos, what does Rashi there say? The whole cosmos was totally Ba'oimi. Because God had created a physical world, the solar system, the biosphere, everything, physics, chemistry, everything was created, but it had no purpose. It had no raison d'etre. It had no meaning to it until somebody was willing to Mekabel Torah. Says Rashi there on that Pasuk Yom Hashishi. Rashi says the whole world was totally obeyed to see whether there would one day be Klal Yisrael who would receive the Torah. As soon as Matan Torah happened, the whole of Briyat Ha'olam was retroactively validated. It was now meaningful. It wasn't just a big machine that was ticking over nicely. So what? It had to be a big machine which created Kiryat Shamayim. Unless there wasn't people who were willing to receive Kiryat Shamayim, then it was without a meaning. Right? So at the moment when the moment when Klal Yisrael received the Torah, that gave the whole world, the whole Bria, its purpose. And this is, for example, you find this, I have to know how to learn Medrash. I often say people learn the Drosh and they don't quite know what's going on in Medrash. Medrash has to be taken very seriously, and you have to understand the allegories and the metaphors in Medrash. So one of the Medrashim at the very beginning of Bereishis Bara Elokim is that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, Bereishis Bara Elokim, the Aleph came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the letter Aleph came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a grumble, with a taina. I'm the Aleph. You start the world with a base. That's the metric. Right? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers and says, don't worry, when it comes to Matan Torah, Vanuchi Hashem Elokecha, your turn will come, I'll start with the Aleph. And it's a very nice story to tell to six-year-old children, with the Aleph and the Beis arguing and having a taina. But we know that Aleph and Beis don't have any tainas, right? Aleph and Beis are letters of the alphabet. What did Chazal want to tell us in this medrash? So what I suggest to you is exactly along with this theme, which is mentioned in all the medrashim and the rishonim and the achronim, that actually, even though it's true, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Borei Olam and created the physical world, that actually the physical world was the base. Base meaning here, it was of secondary importance. Base doesn't mean the number two, meaning what? It means it's secondary. What was the primary importance? The primary importance was that there should be people in this world who makabel malchus shamayim. That's the Aleph. So even though historically the Aleph came much, much later than 2,500 years after Briyas Ha'olam came Matan Torah, but it was the Aleph. It was the primary moment, and that was the Aleph, and the previous one was the base. And this is really a theme that you find in several places. And again, the Tzatzemach uses the concept of the Tikkun, and the Tzatzemach says that Matan Torah was metakein Briyas Ha'olam. What does he mean by that? What does it mean that there was a tikkun of Briyas Olam? That Briyas Olam was somewhat chaser, was a ikka chaser in our sense. Briyas Olam was this magnificent, incredible universe, right? But it didn't have a purpose. So the tikkun came at Matan Torah in Parshas Yisro. That was the tikkun of it. And there's a very, very interesting Balat Turim, which I want you to, if you have a chance, to look it up, because I haven't got time to go into it in detail. The Balat Turim says, on the Pasuk Bereishis Bara Elokim and Shemayim Vaaretz, we've got a whole Arichus, but one of the things he says is, notice, he says, that Bereishis Bara Elokim and Shemayim Vaaretz is a Pasuk with 7 words and 28 letters. And there's another Pasuk in the Torah, which has got 7 words and 28 letters, which is, Vayidaba Elokim Eiz Kol Hadvorim Ha'eila Leibor. The introductory pasuk, so the Aseret HaDibros, is the other pasuk in the Torah, which has got 7 words and 28 letters. Right? And the reason why, and these two psukim, he says, are sort of correlate to each other, but Rabbi doesn't spell it out. What he means is to bring this keshe. And then he says, and that's why when Chazal came to write the greatest tefillah, the nusach, the most important tefillah that we had, right? So when Chazal came to write the Kaddish, they created a pasuk, Yehei Shmei Rabba Mavorach La'olam La'omei Omaya, which has got 7 words and 28 letters. Because that pasuk is Yehei Shmei Rabba Mavorach. The Shem Hashem should be Mavorach, should be blessed. How is the Shem Hashem blessed? Only through taking the Bria Sa'ilam, the physical world, and the tacking it, and giving it kedusha, giving it meaning, a purpose, through the Yaseret HaDibros, through the Kabbalah Satera, that connection, that is the Yehei Shmei Rabba Mavorach. You have a very beautiful, why 7 words and 28 letters? It's got a whole lot of research on that, what exactly it is. It's got to do with whatever. That's your homework, Rabbi, so you can look that up in the Balaturim, on the first pasuk in the Torah. But it's just a very very beautiful idea about the relationship between Bria Sa'olam and Matan Torah. I'd like to end up with one very beautiful final Dvar Torah. And this is from the Maharal. At the very end of the parsha, Pasuk says, V'imizbach avon in kas eli, right? Sizna, right? If you come to build a mizbeach, then it shouldn't be. You shouldn't cut the stone with an axe. Okay. Says Rashi, what do you mean ve'im mizbeach avon in kas? The word ve'im implies maybe you will, maybe you won't. If you do it, then this is the way to do it. So building a mizbeach was an integral, was the center point of the whole mishkan and later on the base of Mikdash. It wasn't something optional. Why ve'im? It should say, when, so he says, up here, the word ve'im here means kasher. The word ve'im means when you will make the mizbeach. Remember, Chazal was speaking about the shamir, right? There was a special worm that had certain acidic, whatever, could cut rock, whatever. The point is, we have a very strange situation where the word v'im, which means if, maybe you will, maybe you won't, actually means ka'asher, means you're mechuyev to do it. When you do it properly. Says Rashi, this happens 3 times in the Torah. That's the Rashi of this week's parsha. Look it up. What are the other 2 times? One of them is in next week's parsha, in kesef talves ami, which is about giving chesed, looking after an oni, looking after someone who is in need, giving him an interest-free loan, etc. That's also in. It's not optional. It's obligatory to do chesed and to help people in need. And the third one is in takriv minchas bikurim l'Hashem, korban oimer, right? Brought the bear on the second day of Pesach. That is also introduced by the word in takriv korban minchas bikurim l'Hashem. These are the 3 times, says Rashi, in the whole Torah, where the word in means kasher, which doesn't just mean if, but maybe you won't, it means if and you must do it. Ask the Maharal the obvious kasher. Why would the Torah use in when it means kasher? In clearly means if you do it, but maybe you will, maybe you won't do it. Why say kasher? Why not say kasher? And he's got a most remarkable parrot in the Guraria. If you have time to look at it, I can only give it to you a shorter version. But he says as follows. He says these 3 psukim represent 3 different mitzvahs. And he says it's true about all mitzvahs in the Torah, that when we engage to do a mitzvah, we are motivated. Why are we motivated to do a mitzvah? Hashem, it says, in the first instance, we are doing mitzvahs in response to a tzivui Hashem. Hashem Baruch Hu commanded us, that's the right way to live. That's what we're going to do. Why? Tzivui Hashem. Says the Maharal, there are 3 exceptions. There are some mitzvahs where not only does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want you to do those mitzvahs, he wants you to want to do those mitzvahs. Now, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to have the rotzein pnimi, that you should feel, you have a moral sense, that this is the right thing to do, even were they not to be. And what are they? So he says the first one is tefillah. When you come to daven, one shouldn't make one's tefillah, right? The tefillah shouldn't be something where, okay, I'm coming to you, what can I do? I'm a chiyuv tefillah, nothing to be done, I'm going to go daven. One should, says Maral, have a feeling that it's a wonderful privilege to be able to be able to lift my ablera, to stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and down with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the way to fulfill the mitzvah, even though it's true, it's a chiyuv, but you should be motivated by a rotzon pnimi that you want to do it. Even were they not to be a chiyuv, you would still do it. The second thing he says is chesed. Chesed we should do because we have compassion with somebody in need. And the third thing he says is akoros hatov. Akoros hatov, when somebody, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has given us the harvest, we should want to do something to acknowledge HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the Borei Olam and the Mechalek El Chayim B'Chesed. And therefore, it shouldn't be, we're not bringing the Omer because we have a chiyuv to bring them. We're bringing the Omer as a HaKadosh HaTov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like Bikurim. HaKadosh HaTov, that he gave us the harvest, he's given us Mechalek El Chayim B'Chesed, that should be natural. So the Maral, the Torah uses the word V'im in order to capture this idea. This idea that we shouldn't go into it with a sense of chiyuv. Of course, there is a chiyuv, but we should be motivated by the rutzen that it's something that we want to do. We want to do because we understand, right, the teva, we understand this is the right thing to do. It's the right thing to stand in tefillah before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's something wonderful. And it's a privilege to be able to do so. It's a wonderful thing to be able to do chesed. And it's wonderful to give HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we should feel that we should want to do it. And this is a very, very interesting assertion, right? I mean, we all know that with educating children. Sometimes educating children, you want them to do something, but you don't only want them to, I don't know, organize their lives or study a bit or behave better or whatever. You want them to want to do it. You don't just want them to do it. You want them to want to do it. Right? You want them to actually develop some sort of inner compass of some sort, in a moral sense, that they know this is the right thing to do. And therefore, this also is happening here, that even though the mitzvahs, we keep Shabbos, we keep kashrus, whatever it is, that he says it's perfectly legitimate to say, I'm doing this because the Lord Tanash. Actually, I don't feel a natural sense that I can't eat this meat and I can't eat that meat. I can't feel the moral reason for it. It's not something I can feel with the pneumias. I'm doing it in Tzivu Hashem, more essay, I can work with Tzivu alive, right? That's the Lashon Chazal. That says the Maral on this pasuk. In certain areas, the Avodas Hashem, for once to do the Avodas Hashem properly, is to try and do it in such a way that you have an inner desire to do the mitzvah, not just a tzibur Hashem. And therefore, the Torah says, even if you do it, Shilu is giving us the choice. And by giving us a choice, we can then decide, oh, we'd like to do that. And then for the Maral, that is the Rotzim Lifnei Hashem. And that is what I wanted to share with you this evening. September 15, right? Time is that, 10:15? I wish you all a very good evening. Nice to see you all here. And please, God, we should learn Torah together for many years to come. Please, God. Thank you.